Borrowers have become a lucrative profit center for the lenders, who, by the way, are not fly-by-night back-alley operators, but well-manicured executives with a gloss of corporate respectability. These quick cash purveyors have about 24,000 flashy storefronts across the country, making them even more ubiquitous than Starbucks. They rack up $40 billion a year in revenues, maintain PR firms to perfume their practices, create political funds to grease necessary skids, and deploy armies of lobbyists to legalize their usury. This is Jim Hightower saying, the good news is that states are beginning to rein in these payday hucksters by capping their interest rates at a merely outrageous level of 36%. For information, connect with the Center for Responsible Lending, 919-313-8500 or responsiblelending.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by 101 Things to Do in Butte County. The new edition is out and available at over 200 locations countywide. If you're wondering what to do this weekend or looking for someplace to go, a free copy of 101 Things to Do in Butte County can be found at retail shops, visitor centers, chambers of commerce, motels, restaurants, and many other locations throughout Butte County and online at 101thingstodo.net. That's 101thingstodo.net. And by North Rim Adventure Sports, specializing in bicycles, cycling apparel, and equipment, North Rim offers full-service bicycle sales, service, and rentals, and features Trek Bicycles USA and other top brands. North Rim Adventure Sports is located at 178 East 2nd Street in downtown Chico, and on the web at northrimadventure.com. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, foothills, and beyond. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I am Jeannie Trezino. My co-host, Robert Jones, is once again on the road, so Danny Toms has agreed to co-host as we talk about animal issues. Danny Toms, a longtime ethical vegan and animal rights advocate in Chico, is known for his clear thinking, straightforward way with words, and other nerdy ways. Welcome, and thank you for filling in, Danny.
Jeannie, I don't know how to top that, but it's always my pleasure to return.
What do we have coming up in today's show?
Tonight on Non-Human Radio, Congress limits testing on lab animals, SeaWorld stock hits rock bottom, yay, and vegan teens move to change school lunches in Los Angeles. All that plus the vegan calendar of events coming up. Over to you, Jeannie.
Veg News reports that a new piece of legislation is on its way toward providing unprecedented protections for animals. Both the Senate and the House have passed the Frank R. Lautenberg Chemical Safety Act, which contains a provision that would reduce animal testing for consumer and industrial products. The legislation is now up for review by President Obama, who is expected to sign it. The provision, drafted by vegan Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey, requires that the Environmental Protection Agency use non-animal alternatives whenever possible. The president of the Humane Society of the United States, Wayne Pacelli, said that, quote, "This is the first signal from Congress that it is a priority to move away from animal testing," end quote. So I think this is seriously great news. Just last month, Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine in Maryland announced that it will no longer require medical students to practice medical procedures on anesthetized piglets, and instead it will allow students the option of training on high-tech simulators. And the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine was the driving force behind urging the medical school to change its requirements. Johns Hopkins is one of the last medical schools in North America to have such a policy of mandatory testing on non-human animals. So, yeah, let's talk about it. The FDA and animal testing and what that means, because folks may not know that in order to protect the public and the environment, the EPA, this is actually a provision that affects the EPA. The EPA is required to do some kind of assessment to guarantee the safety of chemicals for humans and for the environment.
I mean, it's, you know, there's different things going on. Like, in many cases, our government doesn't protect us, so we get quite outraged and they put policies in place. But it's a bureaucracy, and anyone that's dealt with a large organization or the government or a university, you know, bureaucracies tend to perpetuate themselves. So we had these animal testing rules go in for maybe good reasons originally, and then they've just been perpetuated, and often behind the scenes you don't know that, you know, to wear that mascara or, you know, get your makeup, what was actually was done. And, you know, for a long time people have been pointing out it doesn't necessarily help. It doesn't catch the issues they think they're catching. And it's great to see, you know, Cory Booker pushing this and, you know, adapting that law. I think in general, a lot of animal rights issues, it takes some time. It takes some patience. You can't change law and affect change in a day or a week, no matter how angry you are. And, you know,
there are so many angry vegans and angry animal lovers, right, when they learn about things like Dray's testing, which is putting chemicals into rabbits' eyes to assess for sensitivity, which, of course, there will be sensitivity.
Right.
Things like the LD50 test, which stands for lethal dose 50, which I believe was created back in, like, probably the 1940s or the early 50s. And that stands for you dose a population of animals at successively higher doses of any chemical until half that population dies.
That's just insane.
Yeah.
And I think, like, scientists know, you know, cyanide is going to kill you, right? So there's poisons and toxins that we know are poisons and toxins. So we don't need to test those. And then there are things that we know aren't poisons and toxins. And yeah, if you use a ton of them, they might give you a rash or they might, you know, cause cancer in a rat. But none of that really translates to, you know, efficacy in humans. If you look at, you know, the National Anti-Vivisection Society and the animal model and how, you know, even going back to thalamide and the birth defects in the 50s, that was all tested on animals, and it didn't catch the issues. You know, biology, genetics, drug interactions with the endocrine systems, it's all very particular, and these things typically have been proven not to really catch anything.
Right. So it's interesting because what we have are actually two bureaucracies, right? We have a corporate bureaucracy where it's some chemical company that wants to bring a product to market, and then we have a parallel bureaucracy that represents the people. That's what the EPA regulators do, right? And right now, the way the regulations are set up, the EPA has to determine the safety of a product, and then it can ask the manufacturer to test it. What has changed with this new legislation is that the EPA can mandate that the producer test the product to its specifications, and those specifications include this provision created by Cory Booker that says, where possible, you must use alternatives to animals. So it'll work out well. And then for examples of where this process has gone awry in the past, I did a little bit of research before the show. There's an herbicide called atrazine, which is the second most common herbicide after Roundup, that was determined by the companies that were making them that they resulted in cancer to non-human animals. And yet the company made the case that because animals, non-human animals, were not similar enough biologically to human animals, even though they found cancer, found that this product caused cancer in non-human animals, it didn't apply, and the product went to market.
So the whole process is logically false anyway and subvertible by the manufacturers in that sense.
Exactly, and the same thing happened with, and so subsequently atrazine is thought to be a carcinogen to humans, as well as an endocrine disruptor. And endocrine disruptors are hormone disruptors. So when you hear about frogs that are born male, turning female, that is an example of an endocrine disruption that happens usually in the egg state, because those animals are extremely susceptible to waterborne chemicals, and atrazine happens to find its way, because it's an agricultural product, happens to find its way to our groundwater and surface water pretty readily. So that's an example of a test that went awry. Another one that went awry that most folks should know about is the saccharin, which was a sugar substitute. It was recently removed from the federal list of cancer-causing chemicals.
I've been hearing this my whole life.
But in the 1970s, it was considered a carcinogen and removed or required to be labeled as a carcinogen when it was an ingredient in food products, because it was known to cause bladder cancer in rats. Except that the amount that they had to dose the rats with to produce an effect that they wanted to be concerned about was just not relevant to humans. So that's another issue that happens, is that the dose given to the non-human animals is just doesn't compare to a realistic dose of what humans would get.
Right. As we've said before, you know, the dose makes the poison. You know, if you were to say, well, if I ate 1,000 pounds of almond, I would die. Okay, that's because there's a tiny amount of cyanide in there. Does that mean you shouldn't sell almonds? No. So it's the same thing for these types of the 50-50 tests, as you said. It's an unrealistic scenario. You drink too much water, you'll die, right?
Yeah, and actually water is tested using LD50 tests as well. So drinking water is not a cruelty-free product. And I'll just go through. I did a little more research on alternatives to animal testing. And so there's three kinds. In vitro, which means using human cells and tissues in basically a petri dish and assessing reactivity. And they've gotten very good at culturing human cells in petri dishes and actually getting machines in some cases to scan and determine whether there's a reaction. The other model, which I hadn't really heard about, is called in silico. So in silicon we trust. These are computer modeling techniques that they will use to assess combinations of chemicals. So if there's a known a chemical with a known risk factor combined with another chemical with another known risk factor, these computer models help determine the total risk factor.
And that's going to be far more useful, because you're never going to have the number of chemicals on hand to just put into some animal. So you get that whole library of automated computer testing.
Right. And then the third area is they now are using human volunteers in an ethical way with full consent for what they call microdosing. So they'll give a very small amount of, say, a tagged of a substance that is tagged, and then they'll be able tagged somehow with some kind of biomarker that they can get pick up. I don't know if they're using radioactive tagging, like radioactive iodine or something. And then they're finding out where the substance is ending up in the organs. So they can determine whether that will become a problem or not.
You know, I would feel a lot happier to know things are tested on humans before they get to me, you know?
Willing humans, yes.
Willing humans, of course.
And then the last alternative doesn't pertain so much to the EPA, but it does pertain to the example of the Johns Hopkins, where there are very good human patient simulators that you can practice surgery on. Most people are familiar or should be familiar with CPR simulators, which we all, you know, or you can, I guess, if you take a CPR class, learn how to do CPR properly on an adult and on babies. I volunteer with an animal group, and they actually have, like, pet simulators, dog CPR simulators. Yeah. So anyway, so that's good to know. I'm going to move on. So our next news piece is about SeaWorld. So at the close of the stock market last Friday, SeaWorld stock had dropped to about $15.76 per share. That's the lowest it has been in more than a year. SeaWorld stock began to fall after the 2013 release of the movie Blackfish, the documentary that exposed SeaWorld's exploitation of captive marine mammals for entertainment. The previous high, I looked it up, for SeaWorld stock had been about $40 a share back in May 2013, and Blackfish was released in July 2013. So if you look at the trend, it's just pretty much a downward trend.
And if you want to look at the power of well-focused activism, you know, that one movie made a huge difference.
Yes, and we're in an age where social media can amplify the effects of these well-made documentaries. So this time, investors are seeing the writing on the wall, and they're backing away in droves from buying SeaWorld shares. Other things that happened recently to trigger this particular downtick is that a video of a SeaWorld orca that is on loan to a facility in Spain, an orca named Morgan appeared online, and Morgan appears to, in these videos, to have intentionally beached herself in a very unnatural behavior in her performance tank. She had been previously filmed in April of this year, confined in what's called a medical tank, and she's banging her head. She is backing up a couple feet and then banging her head repeatedly on her on the bars that hold her in this medical cage.
It's just horrible. And even consider the fact that she's unknown, that they're commodities to ship around the world in tiny cages for our amusement. And most people probably even don't even recognize that, you know.
So, yeah. And the other things that are going on is SeaWorld shareholders, so current stockholders, are filed a lawsuit against the Park Corporation for not being transparent about the financial damage that Blackfish and subsequent events are having on its profits and its future.
They denied it for quite a while, and it was quite obvious, too, that attendance was dropping, and they were not admitting they needed to change anything. And so shareholder pressure is another way to affect change, for sure.
Yeah, no, and we see that used... We see that used in other areas of socially responsible investing now.
Right.
So public awareness of the cruelty involved in keeping marine mammals captive for entertainment purposes and outrage over the deaths of several marine animals have led to very low attendance rates, plummeting profits, and calls for SeaWorld to shutter and retire their captive animals to sanctuaries. On Sunday, I'll just report one more individual, because I think we should pay attention. On Sunday, Bubbles, the pilot whale, passed away. Bubbles was a wild-caught pilot whale, and she was estimated to be in her 50s, which means that she was born in around 1966. She was the oldest pilot whale in captivity. She was acquired by SeaWorld back in 1987 when SeaWorld bought a facility called Marineland, which I went to as a kid. It was a famous... marine mammal display area in Rancho Palos Verdes. It had a beautiful view. The British Marine Mammal Protection Group Whale and Dolphin Conservation reports that Harcourt Brace Jovanovich was the company that bought Marineland, and that they acquired Marineland primarily to acquire its two captive orcas, Corky and Orky. Because right after they did that, they closed down Marineland, and I don't know what it is now.
Yeah, I don't know. So do we know why they bought it to acquire those orcas? Did they resell them, or did they put them in a sanctuary?
No, Corky and Orky stayed with Marineland and stayed as performers. Yeah, they were performing animals.
I mean, if you just think about, you know, Bubbles was in captivity longer than I've been alive.
Yeah.
And it's horrifying, really.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead, Jeannie.
Oh, yeah, no, I just wanted to say we reported on SeaWorld back on Non-Human Radio with Robert in March when SeaWorld reached an agreement with the Humane Society of the United States to agree to stop breeding orcas in captivity, and they had plans to become a, quote, conservation facility, and the exact shape of that we have yet to see, so...
Yeah, I mean, I hate zoos. You know, I have a long history with zoos. Like most people, you go to a zoo as a kid, and it's cute. Let's see the animals. And even as a kid, you're like, so here's some monkeys in a cage, and they've got a little display saying, in the wild, monkeys do X, Y, and Z. And it doesn't take that much thinking later on to be like, that's much larger space than what they're locked in here. You know, what are they doing here? And there's a lot of claims of... you know, saving species and whatnot, but really that's what animal sanctuaries and welfares do. Zoos are for profit. You know, I like to go to Monterey Aquarium, or I would like to. I like to see the animals, but you have to understand, and it's contributing to, you know, the continued captivity. And it's just like with food for vegans, I think zoos and, you know, marine world type of things are a tough family choice, because usually it's a family outing. Somebody's got kids. Let's show the kids the pretty animals. And it's a hard thing to say, you know, Your entire premise here is flawed, and you're going to, you know, a torture zoo, you know.
Yep.
But,
yep.
you know, ignorance doesn't solve any problems. So it definitely helps to be aware of it and to be aware of all the great actual sanctuaries that do rehabilitate and release species back into the wild.
Yeah, or if they don't release the animals, they are kept in as close as possible natural ranges, right? Most of these big animals have ranges that are in square miles, and yet you look at the facilities and they're actually housed in square
right.
feet.
I mean, you could look at what PAWS is doing for performing animal welfare society for, elephants and the amount of space they get after that. And it's amazing. And I'm always like, oh, I want to go see the elephants in their happy state, kind of like a zoo. And they're like, yeah, we don't actually let people come. And
yeah, for our listeners who don't know, the Performing Animal Welfare Society has a 1,400-acre facility where they house... They don't house. They have rescued elephants from circuses and zoos on rolling foothills, just much like we have in Chico here. But just imagine some elephants wandering around, and they have African and Asian elephants. It's an amazing place to go. Okay, so our last news piece, we're going to talk about change with youth, right? Our final news story, I hope, will give us all some hope. It's about vegan teenage activist Lila Copeland, who founded the Earth Peace Foundation when she was a tender age of 11. She recently organized and hosted a meeting in front of the Los Angeles Unified School District that happened yesterday to promote her Healthy Freedom campaign. If implemented, the Healthy Freedom Project would make vegan food options available to the 600,000 students in the giant Los Angeles school system. Copeland was moved to action after being exposed to pro-dairy programming. That is the,
Got Milk?
Exactly, the Got Milk campaign or whatever they're doing these days, and advertising at school and watching her fellow students consume unhealthy animal-based food.
I mean, I remember growing up going from milk to light milk to, oh, here's strawberry milk and chocolate milk, and it's sweet and tasty, you know.
Yep.
That was an evolution designed to just sell more milk.
Yeah, and sugar.
And
yeah.
Sugar.
So the campaign included celebrities such as, and I just have to feature this. There was an even younger vegan activist. Her name is Felix Russell. And she testified before the Unified School District, the LA Unified School District. But she had previously testified before the LA City Council in support of a successful Ban the Bullhook, that's for elephant bullhooks, campaign back in 2014. Also on the panel was the vegan activist and actress Pamela Sue Anderson, a vegan cardiologist, and the vegan power athlete Tori Washington, who is like super strong, and some others, including Dr. Clapper, who was, if you saw the movie Cowspiracy, he's one of the experts in that movie. So she gave her presentation. It's videotaped and it's online, and she was just very moving. The board members were also treated to a hot vegan meal prepared by a local caterer featuring plant-based protein from that company, Gardein. So, I don't know. To me, youth activists like Lila really prove that the younger populations, our younger people, are just a driving force behind raising awareness about veganism and compassion for animals.
Yeah, so. I totally agree. And I think if you look at the school system there, you mentioned 600,000 students, and say you have just an inkling to try some vegan food, and as a kid, nothing's in your control. So maybe you're even wanting to go vegan or vegetarian, and you're like, well, I can't until I'm 18 and I go to college. Well, maybe I have a job. Maybe my parents are giving me money, so my life's not yet in my control. So kind of normalizing vegan food across all the ages and spectrums and getting everyone exposed to it, that's how you raise awareness.
Yeah, and what I like too is that kids influence their parents.
Yeah.
You know, we saw that with, at least I saw that because I'm a little bit older, but, littering was a thing that my parents did and my parents' peers did, but then there was a public service campaign.
Right. $500 fine.
With Iron Eyes Cody, the Native American actor who was crying by the side of the road about litter. And that influenced a lot of young people. And so then the kids were like on their parents for tossing the trash out the car window.
Right. And, you know, and often the kids prodding the parents to do what internally they already know is sort of morally and ethically right. Like the parents are already, most people have mixed feelings about zoos and eating animals and all these things, and they're trying to, you know, approach it in a way that's normal, and you're not an outsider, and it's not hard, and it's not difficult, or you just need, you know, you need somebody there by your side to help you get over the hump.
Yep, yep. So anyway, I look forward to having an update and see what the fallout from that is, but it makes me happy that she's doing that, especially after we had Charlotte.
Yeah.
Charlotte Roberts as our guest last week as a high school senior who's going right. on to do sustainability studies at in college. It's a good thing.
Yeah, and I mean, I've run into Charlotte at the potlucks, and you don't necessarily think, I'm talking to some kid. I'm talking to some 17 or 18-year-old. If people heard that show, she's well-reasoned and knows what she's doing and why she's doing it. So even in that sense, you know, going forward in your life, knowing who you are and what you are and why you are and being able to discuss it is a great benefit. You know, you wouldn't have had me on the show when I was 18. You know,
nor me.
It's all a great thing.
So, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico and worldwide at kzfr.org. We've been talking about our news events, and now it's time for the Non-Human Radio weekly calendar of events. And I'll just go ahead and talk about a few things that are coming up. This Saturday on June 18th, starting at 11:30 a.m. on Animal Place, will be hosting its first ever Father's Day celebration, which will feature delicious vegan food, including barbecued jackfruit. And if you haven't tried that and it sounds weird, it's not as delicious. Shish kebab and a special vegan dessert by caterers P&A Vegan Catering. And the event will also feature a guided tour of the sanctuary. And if this is an amazing thing, they have some very, very personable animals that they can tell you their stories there. Also coming up this month, later on June 25th, Saturday, June 25th, the Chico Vegan Potluck will be coming up at the Chico Library Community Room. Everyone is welcome, and I guarantee that everyone can try and enjoy being vegan for 2 hours.
The potluck's great. You might think it's going to be a bunch of weird hippies or a bunch of old people. It's a broad spectrum of people. There's a wide variety of good food. Very well run because, of course, Jeannie sets it up. So I'd always encourage people even to stop by, have a nibble.
Okay. I hope to see folks there. If you have an event that you'd like to include in our weekly calendar of events, send an email to nonhumanradio@gmail.com, and I hope to see you around soon. We don't have a pick of the week, so instead we're going to quickly share what's making us generally happy this week. So, Danny, what's making you happy?
Well, I went to the Portland Vegan Food and Beer Festival this weekend, and that was kind of amazing to see the normalization of such things. It was a huge turnout. People are smarter about it. What's the big issue with kind of going vegetarian and vegan is eating with friends, eating food, being normal.
Drinking beer.
People don't even know that there's non-vegan beer. We won't get into that. But you know, it was just a bunch of people eating good, greasy food, fried food.
It wasn't just Sprouts?
No, it wasn't just Sprouts. There were kombucha bars for kombucha enthusiasts, but I think the normalization of such things is really also helping drive veganism and more ethical living because these foods are available. Portland in general, everywhere you go, there's dozens of vegan restaurants. If it's not a vegan restaurant, they have 50% vegan food.
And they have labeled vegan options. Boy, right. I wish the restaurants in Chico would learn to clearly label and offer on a consistent basis some vegan options.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You label gluten-free, you label things that it drives people in. I have coworkers up there. We have an office. And when I go to lunch, they're like, oh, yeah, I know a vegan place. There's nothing about we don't eat that. They're like, oh, that sounds good. Let's go eat it. It's good food, you know.
So you want to hear what's making me happy?
Yeah, what's making you happy, Jeannie?
So what's making me happy is that the Animal Legal Defense Fund is calling on the USDA to conduct an investigation into the roadside zoo in Oroville that is known as the Barry Kirshner Wildlife Foundation. I hope to report more on that, but I just want to lay that bomb down for the folks in Chico that so-called sanctuary is going to be looked at closely for its mistreatment of young baby animals and its confinement of, as we said, large animals.
I even sadly gave them money many years ago before I knew anything about them. And the more you learn, you know, probably good people trying to do the right thing, but it's not good for the animals.
Okay, Danny, we're about the end of our time today. Thanks again for filling in as my co-host. I really enjoyed having you on the show. And we have one last bit of business to take care of. Danny, will you do the honors?
I lost the page. So
here we go.
Which honors am I doing?
You're doing the animal quote of the week.
Oh, yes. I sure will.